Council ready to proceed?
Yes, they are.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, Justices. May it please the Court. My name is Santino Chakoti. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Jose Lopez Vasquez. We're here on the sole issue of whether the trial court erroneously denied Mr. Lopez's motion to suppress evidence from what we contend was an illegal stop. On October 24th of 2006, Mr. Lopez, arriving at the Lancaster Avenue apartment complex, proceeded to get out of his vehicle, proceeded to the steps, carrying absolutely nothing in hand, and began, as Detective Cordato testified to and in his report, had a conversation and hung out with another, with Mr. Hernandez. After some time, Mr. Lopez entered the apartment complex and shortly thereafter exited alone, carrying nothing again, and was seized walking down the sidewalk of Lancaster Avenue.
Is there agreement between the parties that that's when a seizure took place?
There is, Your Honor. The state does not challenge whether we have a Fourth Amendment seizure present. And also, the record at the trial court seems to suggest that all parties, including the trial judge, agree that we have a stop here, a Terry stop under 1902 or Fourth Amendment seizure.
So it was never argued that this was a consensual encounter by the state?
The initial encounter, the state does not challenge whether it was a stop. There are arguments of whether consent was enough to eliminate that, but under jurisprudence under this state, under Wrightson and under Bustamante, the consent will not purge the taint of the illegal seizure.
What is the legal issue, as you see it, for us to decide?
The legal issue, Your Honor, is whether we have reasonable articulable suspicion to warrant the stop. And under that premise, it's our contention that at the time of police making the seizure, they had no information that Mr. Lopez was in any way involved with Mr. Polanco or Mr. Hernandez. They had no intelligence. They had not seen him prior, and his behavior was rather benign from what they gathered. I think although the area of articulable suspicion is one that is not, as this Court is well aware, it's not a neat set of legal rules, I think it does have parameters. And the case law of this state, clearly shows that it's not going to have a showing of articulable suspicion until general suspicion becomes specific enough. And it never rose to that level here. I'd like to direct the Court's attention, if I may, to the record on page 43 of the appendix.
A43?
Of the appendix. Yes, Your Honor.
Before you go any further,
sure.
Let me ask you a question about the phrase you used. Until general suspicion becomes specific enough, by specific enough, do you mean individualized?
I think yes, and also articulable enough. I think there's a reason we call it reasonable articulable suspicion. I think it only becomes valid for the officer to make the seizure when he can point to specific instances, based from a specialized, training, that what he did was valid. I think in many cases, what we have are unwarranted or general suspicions that can have numerous inferences. But until they become specific enough to warrant a seizure, it doesn't pass Fourth Amendment muster.
What role in analyzing the totality of the circumstances here does the fact that the defendant couldn't address his own apartment number during the conversation with the police officer? they suspected in their minds, as I understand it,
yes,
that this was a place frequented by runners for drug dealing. And one of the alternatives, of course, were that some people actually live in the apartment and aren't there as runners.
Yes.
But when they asked him his apartment number, he didn't know what it was.
Yes.
Does that play any role?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor, for the sole reason that it comes after the seizure. I think that's clearly what is in play here, is after he stopped, there are some communications. But what this court needs to ask is whether should he have even been stopped.
Well, let's focus then on what happened up until the stop.
Sure.
As I understand it, there were three people involved who were actors in this drama.
Yes.
There was the main suspect who was driving a car. There was another suspect who was sort of sitting on a you know, a bench or somewhere in front of the apartment building.
Yeah.
And then there was this defendant.
Yes.
This defendant was basically talking with suspect number two, not
yes,
the driver.
Correct.
Suspect number one, the main suspect, drives up, throws a key to the apartment building to suspect number two, who catches it. And then the defendant and suspect two together go into the apartment building.
Yes.
Now, why would that not create a basis for an articulable, reasonable, articulable suspicion, whether it turns out to be true or not, that this defendant was part of that threesome, that is, that group of people who were engaged in a drug conspiracy?
Sure. And I think Your Honor points to one of the facts in your question, that is, what we have is we have a interaction or an exchange between one and two, and we're talking about Mr. Lopez as being person number three. Now, this court has held that mere presence with an associate or someone who is suspected of being involved in some type of felony ring is not enough to warrant a stop.
But there wasn't just presence. I mean, that would be, that argument would certainly be would be perfectly appropriate if the defendant, suspect number three, didn't walk into the building at the same time as suspect number two after number two caught the keys from number one. But they did go in together. And what I'm asking you to comment on is whether that that fact, the fact that they went in together, is what would push this case over the dividing line.
Yes, and respectfully, I would suggest that it's our contention. It does not drive it over the driving line. I think it's still suspicion. And I think what's important to realize is if we look at the trial court's ruling where he found reasonable suspicion, he makes the assumption that Mr. Lopez meets person number one and goes into the apartment unit of person number one, and even person number two. The problem with that is that speculation, because the officers can't see through the walls of the building. So what Detective Coronado is seeing is strictly what's happening outside in the front steps. Now, again, as I pointed the court to the appendix, I think it's imperative to realize that those facts that aren't supported by the record is what the trial court used to deny the motion to suppress. He goes on to say, if I may, three particular facts that are unsupported. Number one, he goes on to say that Mr. Lopez makes a contact with Mr. Polanco. That doesn't happen. He goes on to say that Mr. Lopez actually engages in I can go directly to that. He goes on to say that he goes into the individual, meaning Mr. Polanco, his apartment unit. That also is not in the record. We don't know what they do when they go into the apartment. And the law clearly explains that it's not, the officers cannot speculate at that time. They can't infer. their experience is not a blank check to say, well, I think they were going in there, you know, to Mr. Palanker's apartment. We have no idea what they did in there. And when he's seen leaving, I think it's also the fact that he leaves alone and not in their presence is also significant. Also, as the record indicates, at the time Mr. Lopez leaves the apartment, simultaneously they're doing the raid of the apartment unit. Mr. Hernandez is running in chaos.
Before you move on, I thought you said there were three facts that the trial judge relied upon that are not supported by the record. I've got the first two. What was the third?
Yes, I'm sorry. There would be, he mentions he makes a contact with an individual, meaning Polanco. There's no evidence that Mr. Lopez makes any contact at all with Mr. Polanco. The second one being, it appeared that he met the individual. He did not meet Mr. Polanco. There's no even indication that he said a word to him. And the third one would be that he went into his apartment. So based on that, the trial court denied the motion. Now, it's unclear why the state uses those conclusions after having reviewed the record as to why there was reasonable suspicion. Now, had those facts happened, would there be reasonable suspicion? Maybe. Maybe it's a closer case. But that's not what we have here before the court.
So you're saying that even if there may have been objectively some basis for an articulable suspicion, the rationale of the trial judge wasn't based on that, but was based on some other theory that had an erroneous or non-existent factual foundation.
Yes, Your Honor, the trial court, I think from what we know from the record, he applied the correct legal precepts. What he did not do is correctly use the facts that were before him at the suppression hearing to warrant his finding.
Could we, on a principled basis, say, okay, we've checked the record, we agree with you that the trial judge erroneously relied on three facts that aren't confirmed by the record, but nonetheless on the facts in the record, as we look at them objectively now, mm-hmm. we find a reasonable articulable suspicion?
You could, but I think the facts show otherwise.
Right. Your position is the facts otherwise show just the general
suspicion. I think at the end of the day, when you look at the record, you've got conversations, you've got hanging out. These are words used by Detective Cuadrado. He was hanging out. He was conversing. That's all they have before they make the stop. When he goes into the apartment with Mr. Hernandez, they don't see him. They can't see through walls. He goes out the back door. They raid the building, and then they stop him. Mind you, he's not running at the time. He's not walking rapidly. He's not looking around for police, contact. And I think the decisions of this court in the past, if it looks at Riley, if it looks at Harris, in connection with cases like Quarles, if the court looks at Quarles, it'll see that you need more than general suspicion. You need specific facts.
Mr. Tricotti, excuse me, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Let's assume that the facts are the same as we understand them to be, except in one particular, mm-hmm. and that is that the main suspect number one, throws the keys to your client, the defendant, who catches them, and then he proceeds to go into the apartment along with the other fellow.
Sure.
Would that matter? Would that change the result?
I think if we look at a spectrum, and we've got general suspicion on one end and specific suspicion on the other, and we have to get to specific in order to have articulable suspicion, I think we're getting closer to what's necessary for reasonable suspicion to warrant a stop. Now, those aren't the facts before the court.
But you're saying that if that one fact had been different, that is, if the person who caught the keys, who to whom the keys had been thrown, had been your client, then there would have been a basis for an articulable, reasonable suspicion.
I think we're prepared to say it's a closer case. I think without knowing more, it's getting more to the level.
Don't worry. He's notorious for trying to get people to concede his point.
I plead guilty.
Your Honors, when the court looks at everything as a whole, what it's going to find is that prior to Mr. Lopez's detention, his behavior was completely benign. At the time of the stop, police had no information at all that Mr. Lopez had ever been involved with these two gentlemen at any time. They had no intelligence on Mr. Lopez. Furthermore, they never witnessed him at all at this, you know, within the scheme. And it would be unreasonable to conclude that by simply being there, having a conversation with another person who's a suspect would be enough to warrant reasonable or articulable suspicion.
You want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, please.
Good afternoon. If it pleases the court, my colleague and I agree on one point, and that is when the stop occurred. Right from the beginning of this case in Superior Court, everyone operated under the assumption, and right through the appeal, that the Fourth Amendment became operative, that a Terry-type stop occurred when Detective Silva first stopped the defendant, even though Detective Silva was very polite, may I speak with you. Nevertheless, he immediately began asking Terry-type questions. Where are you coming from? What's your apartment number? And that the information that he received after the point that he began asking the Terry-type questions and getting evasive, obvious answers should be off the table. And the issue is whether Detective Silva and Quadrado and Sullivan, the collective knowledge of the police, whether the police had at that point a reasonable and articulable suspicion to detain the defendant.
There's never been an argument at the trial level that this was a consensual encounter. And if so, that issue, even if it's arguable, has been waived. Do you agree?
I believe so. Perhaps right at the very beginning, again, Detective Silva was very polite, spoke in Spanish, agreed to speak with him, but as soon as he starts asking those Terry-type questions, let me see your identification. What's your name? What's your date of birth? Where are you coming from? Where are you going? That kind of thing. It's obviously a Terry stop. And I'm certainly not saying that at this point this was merely a casual conversation. No, this was an official police stop. And I believe Detective Silva said that even though he was in plain clothes, he had a vest on that said police.
Mr. Donovan,
I'm sorry.
At the heart of this appeal is the argument that the rationale relied upon by the trial judge in denying the motion to suppress is simply not supported by the record.
This is where my colleague and I strongly disagree. Okay. Looking at, this is A43 of the appendix, page 76, that first complete paragraph. Now, it seems to me that what the judge is saying here is that from the facts known by the police at the time, it can be reasonably inferred that, and that police did, in fact, infer these facts, and that the judge is finding this inference to be reasonable, could infer that the defendant actually met with Polanco Lugo because the defendant went into the apartment, into the building with Hernandez and Polanco Lugo, who had thrown them the keys, came in a few minutes later. Therefore, it's reasonably inferable that they all went to the same apartment, the apartment that was rented by Polanco Lugo, as the police had by this time confirmed, and that they met in that building at this this time. Now, maybe the defendant had never met Polanco Lugo in the past, but at least on this time, it's reasonably inferable that they did, and the police did so infer.
Well, the specific language at the beginning of the, in the first paragraph, the judge says that they had observed him in a contact with an individual that they had confirmed on at least two occasions was involved in a drug transaction. That's incorrect, isn't it?
No, Polanco Lugo, they had observed twice engaged in a drug transaction, once 2 weeks before, and this time the police had made controlled buys from them.
Had they observed the defendant in a contact with an individual that they had confirmed on at least two occasions was involved in a drug transaction?
No. I submit that the judge here is saying that it's inferable that this individual, Polanco Lugo, who they knew now was a drug dealer, they'd bought from twice, that this individual, the defendant, then on that day in that apartment had contact with this individual. Without that inference, I mean, this whole case falls apart. I mean, if you don't draw the inference that when the defendant went into the apartment building with Hernandez, the second individual waiting outside, when Polanco Lugo threw the keys to Hernandez, that somehow the defendant went off to a different apartment and just had nothing to do with this at all, then the stop was bad. That has to be a reasonable inference that the police make and that the judge has to accept.
How does the judge consider any other equally reasonable inference, such as once the known drug dealer tossed the keys to Hernandez and went in the building, Hernandez connected with the known drug dealer, followed him in, but the defendant, who happened to be sitting on the stoop and talking to Hernandez the same time, figured that conversation was over, so he went into his own apartment.
Isn't that an equally reasonable inference? Could infer an innocent explanation for every fact, but at some point the facts start to add up.
Mr. Donovan, that if that inference didn't make sense, if that wasn't supportable, then the whole case fell apart.
Oh, definitely.
If there are two equally reasonable influences, how does one constitute reasonable articulable suspicion not negate it?
In this case, I think the most reasonable inference, since the defendant and Hernandez had been waiting outside and conversing together for roughly 10 or 15 minutes before Polanco Lugo returned.
But just the term waiting outside implies more than the facts. They happened to be sitting outside talking. Using the word waiting sounds like they're waiting for both of them or waiting for the known drug dealer. But there's no fact that suggests that the defendant was. He just happened to be talking on the stoop with Hernandez.
Well, I think at the moment that Polanco Lugo arrives and tosses the key to Hernandez and they both go in together confirms. I think the only reasonable inference from that concerted action is that the two were, in fact, waiting for Polanco Lugo, wanted to go to the apartment and waiting for Polanco Lugo to deliver the keys. That is the most reasonable inference that can be drawn. Now, it's certainly within the realm of possibility that Hernandez just out of the blue at that point decided that he was going to go to another apartment. But the most reasonable inference to be drawn from these observations and the one that the police did draw,
we're not focused on what Hernandez may have done when he got up. The point is what the defendant may have intended to do once Hernandez independently decided to go in following Polanco. Why has the inference to be that the defendant and Hernandez were in lockstep?
Because it appeared to Detective Cuadrado at that point that the two were in lockstep, that as soon as Hernandez got the keys and went in the building, defendant went with him. So it appeared to them that they were together. They were acting together.
If someone else hypothetically arrived in another car at the same time and went into the building with Hernandez and the defendant, would there be a basis to stop that person as well?
If Polanco Lugo had gone inside with all three?
Someone else arrives simultaneously as Polanco Lugo arriving in a wholly different car and goes in the building following Hernandez there be a basis to stop that person?
Well, no. There has to be the connection with the known drug dealer that who has just made the purchase. That's what distinguishes this case from cases like Harris and Quarles and Georgia versus Reed, where the police really have no knowledge, specific knowledge, that drug dealing is going on. They're trying to look at various.
Okay, well, help me then. Where is the connection between Lopez and the known drug deal?
That's Polanco Lugo. And the connection is that Hernandez with Hernandez and Polanco Lugo, the two are Hernandez and the defendant are standing outside Polanco Lugo's apartment building. The moment Polanco Lugo gets back from having delivered a second time drug to the police, he throws Hernandez the key, and Hernandez and the defendant immediately in together go inside the apartment building.
Why is it so significant that it's Polanco Lugo's apartment building and insignificant that it's Lopez's apartment building?
But it's not Lopez's apartment building.
I thought he had an apartment in that building.
No. No, it turned out he did not.
Okay.
No. No. The police just then, that day, found out that Polanco Lugo actually lived there because when he drove the Dodge Stratus the second time, this was a car registered to him. And so the police now learned his actual name and what apartment he lived in in that building.
It allowed them to go and get. Were there in the building? How many apartments altogether?
The detective testified four.
Four
apartments in the building. So the police at this point knew which apartment, and so that allowed them to get the search warrant, which is the case against Polanco Lugo.
That's
neither here nor there with
Mr. Donovan.
So at this point, when
Mr. Donovan
goes in, and oh, I'm sorry.
The articulable suspicion, if I understand your position right, was that because all three of these people went in together, that is what happened, isn't it?
Yes.
Then two of the three, Hernandez and who had a connection with the main drug dealer.
Yes.
And Lopez went in together, that Lopez, was part of this cabal.
Exactly.
That was the articulable suspicion that justified a stop. Is that correct?
Yes.
And was that what the court held? That is, was that the basis on which the court upheld the Terry stop?
Yes. As I read that paragraph, the judge is saying these were all inferences that the police made and that I accept. That the two, that they all went in together, they went to that apartment, that is the apartment that was owned by Polanco Lugo, the drug dealer, and that, I should point out there were a few other facts. Again, let me
try to get straight in my mind. On page A4 of the appellant's opening brief, with a citation to appendix page 34, it says Lopez parked his car and went to his residence at the 3914 apartment building. This was the first time police ever saw him. I had the impression from the beginning that the facts showed that both the defendant and the drug dealer, Polanco, had a residence at 3914. And you tell me that's not true.
I see nothing on the, nothing in the transcript to support that. And maybe Mr. Malik may have some information that nobody else has.
Well, he cites this to the transcript, the appendix.
A14.
The only inference is that Polanco Lugo was operating out of the Lancaster Court apartment complex where Lopez Vasquez lived.
Well, Polanco Lugo lives there. Yes, that's determined.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about Lopez, because your case, as I understand the basis for your reasonable articulable suspicion, is that Lopez, the defendant, was simply hanging out on a stoop where he had no other reason to be there other than to talk to Hernandez, and Hernandez was clearly waiting for Polanco Lupo because Polanco Lupo tossed him the keys. And then because Lopez went in with Hernandez, there's this clear association they must have been waiting together.
Yes.
But Does that change if the facts are Lopez actually lived there?
No, actually it doesn't, because the police don't know. The police have no idea where Lopez lives. The police did not confirm, for example, that they had no idea who Lopez was.
Okay,
but if they
well
did,
then let's assume they didn't. They didn't rule out in their assessment of whether it was reasonable enough to stop him that he might well have lived there and might be just a stoop chatter, like many other apartment-dwelling stoop chatters in this country. And Hernandez happened to be the person with whom he was chatting at the time when Polanco Luco came up and flipped Hernandez some keys. So what we have that ties it all together, as I understood your original argument, is the mere fact, and I'll take strike mere, the fact that Hernandez and Lopez went into an apartment building together, beyond the general suspicion, not ruling out whether he actually was a resident there or not, why is that so significant to reaching the conclusion that there's a reasonable, articulable suspicion to believe that he's involved in the drug dealing that Polanco Luco is engaged in out of that apartment complex?
Again, just that it is a reasonable inference to draw from all the actions that have been going on so far, that he does hang out for 10 or 15 minutes, apparently waiting, chatting with Hernandez, and that when Polanco Luco arrives and tosses the key to Hernandez, the two go in together. And then it's a few minutes later, followed by Polanco Luco. There's some more in and out from the apartment building. Some other people enter the building and then drive off in the Dodge Caravan that had been used for the delivery the week before. There seems to be a lot of in and out going on here.
So the police didn't know one way or another whether Lopez lived at that apartment house or complex at the time or not?
Can I say?
The record shows the police didn't know when they were forming their reasonable articulable suspicion whether Lopez was sitting on the stoop because that's where he lived or sitting on the stoop because he drove up separately from somewhere else and his only purpose there was to wait with Hernandez for Polanco Luco to arrive.
Right. That is certain because the police did not know who Lopez was. They had no way. They had never seen him before. They had no way of checking where his residence was. They didn't have a name, so there was no way they could confirm his residence. So the police did not know where he lived. I could say that, but I agree with certain.
Just for the record, what is the reasonable articulable suspicion that Lopez is engaged in criminal activity? What's the criminal activity that you contend that they could reasonably suspect that he was engaged in when he walked into the apartment or was coming out of the apartment and walking down the street?
Yeah, drug trafficking.
When he was walking down the street?
When he was walking down the street, yes. The police knew from, again, their training and experience, which is not to be sneezed at, that drug gangs and the Cuadrado set of the Mexican-Dominican drug gangs use a lot of what he called change-ups, different cars, different individuals. It's not simply one or two people doing all of this. There's lots of different individuals involved. And there seemed to be a lot of activity going on here at this particular time. The two individuals getting out, getting into the caravan, and driving off. The caravan had been used. Polanco Luco had just made a delivery. And so the police had a reasonable suspicion that the defendant, as he's going to his car, is either transporting drugs on his person in order to make a delivery, or maybe he has drugs in the car in order to make deliveries, maybe to deliver to Polanco Luco. But he had some connection with this drug trafficking ring, and that he was at the time engaged in drug trafficking.
And that's all because he walked into the building with Hernandez.
Yes, that connected that in the police minds, and the trial judge found this a reasonable connection. That connects him to this ongoing drug trafficking ring. And that's where the case hinges. Is Lopez simply happened to be there, wrong place, wrong time, or is he a member of Polanco Lugo's drug trafficking ring? That's what it comes down to.
And our focus is on the objective facts. Would a reasonable person have concluded that? Doesn't focus on what the police believe, correct?
Yes. Were the police inferences, and I can point out these were the same inferences made by the trial judge, were these inferences reasonable? That from the objective facts observed, did the police have a suspicion that Lopez himself, that individualized suspicion, Lopez was engaged in the drug trafficking ring along with Polanco Lugo, who obviously was. That was beyond beyond any doubt.
Thank you.
The court has no further questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Donovan.
Your Honors, I believe the Chief Justice had a question regarding whether Mr. Lopez resided in the complex. And I think if on page 49 of the record, Detective Cuadrado, during cross-examination, discusses what Detective Silva engaged in conversation with Lopez. And during the conversation, when asked, where are you coming from, Mr. Lopez then says he's coming from his residence at the Lancaster Avenue Apartments. That's where that fact came from regarding the record.
But it's correct that the police did not know before they stopped him that he was
correct
a residence there.
Correct.
Okay.
Secondly, the state concedes that its case falls apart.
Is that the same? Do you know? Is that the same pedigree information on his arrest? In other words, is that the residence on his arrest data?
Regarding
where Lopez lived, is that what he gave when he was processed?
That I don't know, Your Honor. I can provide it to the court if it would like. That may be on the indictment. I have to check on that. Or also in the information that he provided, I can check on that if the court would like.
Right.
The state concedes that its case falls apart if it's not reasonable to conclude that the defendant went into the same apartment. And I think what's imperative in all of this is that we're dealing with an apartment that has 4 to 6 units in it. And the question best to be asked, if you have an apartment with 100 units, you know, it's a slippery slope here. I mean, I think Chief Justice Steele pointed out that what if somebody had actually driven up? I think Justice Ridgely had the same sentiments. What if somebody happens to be there at the same time and walks in with these two gentlemen? Do we stop everybody? And I think that's the dangerous road that this could lead to. And I think what also gets lost in this is, you know, in connection with this, is the protection of our citizenry. I think in order for the Fourth Amendment to have teeth, there needs to be, you know, basis besides, well, I think he did this and, oh, I can infer he did that. There's nothing that points besides a conversation hanging out outside the apartment. That's all they have.
So in this particular case, if I understand your position correctly, what would have been the additional element that would have been necessary to create a reasonable, articulable suspicion would be some direct contact between the main suspect and your client, correct?
Yes. I think if we go down that road, then we're getting there. We're getting to articulable suspicion. I think if what the trial judge found in those three facts, which are unsupported by the record, then, you know, we're probably there. But those aren't the facts here. That's not what the record supports. And with that, we would ask that the motion to suppress that was denied be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.
Please rise.